Hey guys, if you know me, you know I love to travel and you know I love to save money. This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further. Literally. They cover all things travel finance, like how to plan group trips that don't bust your budget or your friendships. How to maximize points for real savings, not just free bottled water. How to avoid paying for upgrades you won't use, and so much more. They're doing great work over there. Check it out. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast. The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. Thanks for listening. My guest today is George Georgian. Before we get to George, I have a few announcements. Our website is traveltalespodcast.com. Go there. You'll find some photos of our guests, some stories that I've written, some stories that some of the guests have written. You'll find links to their social media. You'll find links to our social media. Talking Instagram, folks. Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. Let's build those numbers up, shall we? We have a Facebook page. Whatever streaming service you listen to us on, and there are plenty out there, be it Apple Podcasts or maybe Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you listen to us, I ask that you please give us a good rating. Why not do that? Costs you nothing, helps us, builds the audience, and makes me look good. So if you can do that, I'd appreciate it. If you think you'd be right for the show, or maybe you know somebody who's right for the show, or maybe you want to write me, ask me some travel questions, or just tell me I'm cool, you can write me at traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. George Georgian is a man who's had more than one epiphany in his lifetime. George lives in London, and like most people, he worked his whole life, raised a couple daughters, and then in his early 50s, was diagnosed with cancer. And it did not look good, but amazingly, he beat it. But it changed his perspective, of course, as it would, and he realized that time is our most precious asset. Suddenly, he found himself retired, and at first, he thought, great, thankful to be alive, spend time with friends, family, on and on. But then he realized, after a while of being retired, his life lacked purpose. It lacked meaning. So he began to focus and really study about retirement and how it sounds ideal for a lot of people, but what they don't realize is that losing their work means losing a lot of their identity and their reason to get up in the morning, which, as we all know, you need a reason to get up in the morning to keep you going in life. So he began to study. He began to look inward. He went off on a 30-day silent retreat. And he also traveled around the world. He went around the world in 80 days to take a dream trip, but also it was part of a gap year. And I love the idea of a gap year, the first time I heard about it in other countries, where kids who get out of high school take a year off to see the world or just get out of their comfort zones and see something else before going to college. Now it makes total sense to me. And George did kind of the same thing to open his mind, to see the world, to get a new perspective. He only did it later in life. And now he uses what he's learned to inspire others and teach others how to approach retirement, how to keep your mind engaged, how to be interested. And he's an author, a speaker, and of course, because he's on the Travel Tales podcast, he's a traveler. So it was a pleasure to meet him and talk to him. And I found our talk pretty inspiring. And I hope you do too. Here's my chat with George Georgian. Grow up in London?
No. Well, kind of, but I was born in deepest, darkest Africa.
Oh, what? Okay.
In the Sudan, Anglo-Egyptian Sudan. Yes. The result of the Armenian genocide. Grandparents via Egypt go south to the Sudan. And at the age of 10, I was sent to boarding school.
Okay.
And that was my journey.
Okay. And your parents, did they open a business in the Sudan, or did they work for the government, or how did they make it?
Well, my grandparents went down with the British Army.
Okay.
Way back, kind of at the turn of the 1890s.
Got it.
My father was a very successful businessman down there, representing mostly American, British, and German companies and so on. So he did very well. He was almost going to emigrate to the U.S., but he was making good money, so he didn't want to go.
Right. And we all know the situation of the Sudan now.
Oh, God, don't even go there.
I know.
In fact, that whole place, that whole area is...
I know. It's heartbreaking.
Dire straits.
Yeah. And we say, don't go there. Literally, don't go there now because, yeah, it's rough. And do you still have family there, or did they all manage to get out?
30, 40 years ago,
okay,
they left.
Good. Yeah, it's got to be tough to see, right? I mean, it's got to be heartbreaking.
Well, you know what? It was for a time, several decades back, but life goes on and you move
right.
on. And, you know, you find new ways to find joy in life.
Exactly. One of the reasons that your story fascinated me, and I know your people contacted me, I talked to a lot of expats, and there's different ways of the way travel and experiencing other cultures can change our lives. And you seem to have found yours through retirement. And it was a big moment in your life. And I'm sure you always traveled and you might have been a well-traveled person, or maybe not. We'll find out.
Yeah.
But travel had a way of transforming your retirement and the way you looked at the world, correct?
Absolutely. I think in a way, I traveled much like most people do. You go to nice places to see nice things, to enjoy good food, the sun, the sea. But the travel that I did post-retirement was a different kind of travel. It was the kind of travel that Mark Twain would have explained, in the sense of travel is fatal to bigotry, prejudice. And narrow-mindedness, right? It's about expanding your mindset, expanding how you see the world in a different way. So the travel that I did in my Odyssey of an Elder around the world in 80 days was one set with intention. I wanted to learn how other people look at life. I wanted to see how people overcame challenges. So for example, I went to South Africa, and one of the places I wanted to see was Robben Island. Now, this isn't about politics. This is about an individual's journey through 27 years of jail. And I'm talking about Nelson Mandela.
Yeah.
Coming out of that jail without anger, bitterness, or resentment. Now, I read his book, but I wanted to physically go and see where he was incarcerated and what kind of life he had, and to try and understand how he overcame that. Now, why would I want to do that? I did that because when people retire, they think it's over. The idea of unretiring and starting a new beginning is something that's unthinkable, in the sense that it's too much risk. Life is a risk. We're not guaranteed another day. And in a sense, retirement is obsolete now, because longevity has made sure that the vast majority of us are going to outlive our savings. So knowing that, why would you continue on that road? Why would you not think of exploring a new way of living, which and doing work, which is not work anymore, because you love what you do? Mm-hmm. So it's about a new discovery. It's about finding an evolved identity of oneself, because our identities are not written in stone.
Nelson Mandela's story, we're all familiar with it, but yeah, the fact that he wasn't bitter and angry and it wasn't out for revenge is pretty amazing. And it also reminded me of when I was in Rwanda. I did a guerrilla trek, but we also went to the Genocide Museum, and I think it was the 25th anniversary. Yeah, so it was 2019. And to see that museum is horrendous. It's you know, it's a really hard day, but and knowing it was so fresh that there's still and when you get to Rwanda, Kigali was still the to this day, other than South Africa, maybe Cape Town, the cleanest city I've ever been to in Africa. And it's really, really amazing to see it was functioning. It was people were living their lives. And to hear the stories and know that they could survive this, probably the worst thing, you know, a million people, neighbor against neighbor.
Tremendous.
And you know, this new government said, we can't just be out for revenge on whoever, you know, we have to live on and make peace with it and live amongst each other again. And they're doing
it. Not easy. Not easy.
Not easy, you know. And
no.
I came away with it going, man, if these people can and move on after that, you know, just about anything is possible.
Well, that's kind of miraculous, but
it is.
There's an element of transcendence that's needed. But those are few and far between.
Yes.
I went on a safari as well in South Africa. And when I was on that safari, it was 5 days of safari twice a day, 3 hours each time, one in the morning from 6 to 9, and one in the late afternoon from 4 to 7. And 5 days of this. So I had 10 excursions and I was just blown away by the beauty and brutality of nature. But we humans are worse than any animal. You know, unfortunately we have this, which makes us dehumanize the other so we can get rid of them. But it's, it was a huge learning curve for me. Everywhere I went.
Well, we're going to get back to the travel, first of all, because that's, of course, the theme of this podcast, but also your retirement. Were you forced into retirement or was this something you elected to do?
Great question, Mike. Great question. I was forced because at the age of 52, I was diagnosed with a bone tumor and given 6 months to live. And so that changes everything because, you know, we get up in the morning and we think we're immortal. We really do. It's the human condition. You know, we're up, we've got issues, we've got to deal with this, we've got to deal with that. We forget that we might not make it to the end of that day. And for me, it was a huge wake-up call because up to the age of 52, money was my only direction. And I think that's the direction that most people go. We never calculate that time is a commodity that's finite. Money is not, but time is. And we have this thing of we immunize ourselves so we don't have to think about time other than how it derives money for us. So it's not about blaming anybody. I was in the same position. But to wake up and realize that I only had 6 months to live and I was in that state for like 3 weeks while they were doing tests on me. And the oncologist said to me that in 98% of cases, bone tumors are secondary cancer, which means it's likely to have spread throughout your body. There's nothing we can do, but we're going to do tests to verify. And it just so happens that I belong to the 2% club. I was lucky. And from that day on, I recognized I was living on bonus time. And there are days I forget that. We're human. But it doesn't take me long to come back on track. So I semi-retired at the age of 52. And for 9 years, I drifted. First 18 months was the honeymoon period. It was wonderful.
You're just enjoying life. It's like, I'm alive. That's cool. That right there is.
Lunches, friends, golf, doing all the stuff you do, right? And it comes to a point where you just get really restless, bored. And it was eating me from within. I actually even, I compare it to a house with termites. The restlessness and boredom was eating me from within. The staircase of my self-esteem collapsed, right? It's not about money. It's about meaning. What's the meaning of my life? And I'm a slow learner. And I like to sort of experience things myself to make my own decisions as to what I'm going to do. I read a lot. I read people like Cicero, who wrote a book on old age. I try and see what 2,000 years ago a genius what I could learn from that genius. And I'll share with you one funny thing from Cicero, which he said, because he divorced his wife and married a young woman who was his daughter's age, and he realized there was nothing to talk about. He could not communicate with her. And one of those 10 lessons that he had in that book is that sex is highly overrated, which is fascinating because nothing's changed.
My girlfriend certainly says that. She agrees with she agrees. Let me tell you.
So I, you know, what can I tell you, Mike? You know, it's after 9 years, I'd come to the point where everything was going to shit, and I did something crazy. I decided to go on a 30-day silent retreat up in North Wales, in the Clwyd Valley. It's my background is Catholic, so it was a Catholic thing. It was Ignatian Jesuit place. So
was it like an old
days,
monastery, like kind of like
kind of? But most of the people there were from all different kind of religions. Yeah, they were all going through these exercises, spiritual exercise, which allows you in the silence to go deep within, and it takes, for example, there's no emails, no internet, no books, nothing. You are on your own. And one of the exercises I had was an audit on my life by looking at the homes I'd lived in all my life. So I spent about 2-3 days doing that. And I spent another few days going over it. And I recognized that none of the good things that happened to me could have happened without a preceding crisis. Now, it almost seems obvious when you say it, but you don't know it when you're in it. And at that ended up with, I had 12 great stories that come out of that. And I wrote a book called Spirit of Gratitude, Crises or Opportunities. And it's from there I decided to learn about mindset, how to change my mindset. And that took me to see Bob Proctor, the late Bob Proctor, the mindset coach in Canada. And on the back of that, I created a new business to help retirees to change their mindset post-retirement so that they could have a new beginning.
There's a lot of people, me included, sitting there listening and thinking, okay, well, what about, did you have a, or do you have like kids or a wife or a family supporting you through this? Or were they, you know, your friends and family thinking, oh, he's off, he's off the reservation and off doing his own thing?
Well, my siblings think that, yes.
Okay.
to be fair. But I was married for 40 years and I have two adult daughters. We were married for 40 years and we very close family. And I think it was after our 40th, we were going in different directions and we had been going in different directions for a while. And so we ended up having an amicable divorce.
Was the retreat like something, was it post-retreat or pre?
Oh, yeah. But no, post. By quite a few years. It was just post-COVID.
Oh, right.
So okay. 2019. I went to the retreat in 2016. This is 2019, 2020.
Okay.
And ultimately, the divorce went through in 2023. Okay. But we're still very close and we're still together. But just to kind of say this to you, I think what the divorce did, it helped us to recognize that we needed to find ourselves first. And I'd heard this story about this Jewish man who'd been married three times to the same woman, divorced her twice, because you need to be able to have that mindset change, to be able to have a new set of a new understanding between you of how your relationship is going forward. You do need to do that. And that is a risk too.
Did she try doing it with you? I mean, was she on board at first and then, you know what, this is not for me? Or did
you
just
talk about the retreat?
Or retreats or just going on this journey. You know, was she at the same mindset? Because she didn't have cancer, or maybe she did. But you know what I mean?
No, she did not.
You were living through a different kind of thing than she was experiencing.
Absolutely.
Right.
This is that's a really good point. She didn't go to the retreat with me. I went to the retreat because I couldn't cope with what was going on in my life, both at home and at work. So, but she also didn't come with me on my 80 days around the world. And I couldn't have done the 80 days around the world if I'd still been married.
Right. Okay. Getting to that, the 80 days around the world, What year did you start this? What year did you do this? And how much was planned ahead of the time? And how much was, you know what, I'm just going to book it on the way. Wherever it takes me, it takes me. How did you do this? Was this pre-COVID? And was this?
No. This was in 2024, last year.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this is recently.
Oh, it's recent. It's wow, very okay. recent. Yeah. I planned this for 6 months. Let me backtrack a minute.
Okay.
Why did I do this 80 days around the world? I was teaching and coaching clients to find a new beginning in retirement. And one of the things I was advising them to do was to take a gap year.
I love the idea of a gap year. It's very common in the UK and in Australia and stuff like that. And I always promote it here in America, and they don't do it. Very few do. And I think it's completely useful. And we need it more than anyone, I think.
Oh, absolutely. But the gap year for students, you know, that's what students do, because it's almost a rite of passage. They finish school. Before going to college or university, they go out and see the world. And in doing that, they kind of discover something about themselves. So they come back to working life enriched, more adult, because they've hit the real world.
Right.
And in a sense, when we retire, it's a linear journey. Nothing's really changed, other than our identity's compromised because our work is finished. We don't know what the hell we're doing, and we're just drifting into oblivion. But actually, retirement is a crisis in the true sense of the word, because crisis means a turning point. And so when we reach retirement, our working life technically is over, but we don't know where we're going. Who are we now without the work that we've been doing?
No, I remember watching the thing about, I'm sure you've heard about the blue zones and the people that live to 100 or whatever. And while diet and lifestyle has a lot to do with it, one of the things they always bring up is a sense of community and a sense of purpose, a reason to get up in the morning. And that helps you live longer and keeps your mind sharper and fights things like senility or I don't want to say dementia.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But we're always thinking about lifestyle and food, which is important, no question about it. Your money, your investments, also important, no question about that. What we forget is the emotional and psychological reason for living. That's lost after work. All right. I mean, I did a survey of, well, I had a survey which I created just after COVID or just before COVID. Actually, it was during COVID. And it was a 9-question survey couched as a quiz, because people love quizzes. They hate surveys. And it was 9 questions, demographic and psychographic. And I advertised it over 12 months on Facebook. Small. Not big, nothing major. 35,000 people from the English-speaking world kicked onto the first question. 23,000 completed all 9 questions. One of the things I took away from that, which I can share sort of quickly with you, is that 50% were concerned about their health. Now, obviously, this was during COVID, so they would have been. 35% were worried about outliving their savings, and about 15% were worrying about not having purpose. So that this is what people thought, but I had a nagging feeling that I was missing something here. And I went back to the drawing board, and I came across a quote from Henry Ford, who said, if I'd asked people what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. That was an aha moment for me. Because I realized I'd asked people what they thought was the problem, but people don't know what they don't know. And one of the things I derived from that exercise was the first casualty in retirement is our identity. So we have to create a new identity, because if we don't, that old one is going to be like a shadow for us for the rest of that, the rest of our lives. And in a sense, if you choose something very different to what you were doing before, you're likely to have a much more enjoyable time because you're not going to compare yourself. You know, do you know who I am?
Right.
Do you know what I have achieved? You know, come on. Who cares? Who you were is gone, right?
Well, I know you advocate for the gap year, but your trip was 80 days, which is only a couple months.
True.
But so what did you do with that year? What was the rest of the year? And first of all, yeah. Let's get right to travel and getting back to the whole year. But first, yes. The 80 days, where did you go? Did you map it out or did you fly by the seat of your pants?
No, I did map it out.
Okay, good.
I structured it, allowing a lot of elasticity in between. Because 80 days is 80 days. And I was going on the, you know, I had to have a framework. I chose 80 days because of the Jules Verne novel that sure. I loved as a kid. And I didn't go
in a balloon.
Fog. I didn't go in a well, I did, but before.
Sure.
But I didn't go to Yemen or to the Houthis. I decided to take my own trip in my own way. And so the countries I went to were South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, and Canada. Some of those countries I went to because I thought, could I possibly live there? Exploring. Japan was more something I wanted to do and spend more time understanding the culture and what I could learn, particularly when you mentioned earlier on about the blue zones, Okinawa, sort of, you know, the idea of ikigai, which is something that I obviously use. So I chose a travel agency that custom makes your journey for you, because I spent 2 weeks in each of these countries, except Japan, where I spent three. And to maximize what you do, I had to be very selective about where I went. 2 weeks, you can't go everywhere. So in South Africa, I chose obviously Cape Town, Robben Island. I chose the Garden Route, driving on the Garden Route. And I chose a safari up in the Timbavati Game Reserve up in the north. So those are the three things in South Africa. In Australia, I wanted to see the Great Barrier Reef. Why? Because it's one of nature's miracles. And I thought, I was 69, and I thought, I'm never likely to go there and see this if I don't do it now.
Right.
All right? But we all have this illusion that, oh, I'll do it sometime. You won't.
Yeah,
and it's just as well I did it, because if I'd done it this year, I wouldn't have been able to get insurance for the 80 days around the world.
Why is that?
Bizarrely, if I travel to South Africa, come back to London, I can insure myself. And I go to Australia and come back to London, I can insure myself. But a 69-year-old traveling around the world from one point to another for 80 days, the insurance guys, the actuaries are going, the odds are he's probably going to fall off a Jeep in South Africa.
Right.
And we're going to have to repatriate him.
That's
Forget
interesting.
About it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you kind of stuck with the Commonwealth countries other than Japan. And I guess that would be
an easier
place for you to expatriate if you wanted to and live somewhere.
To some extent, yeah.
Visa-wise, it would be easier. Did you come away with wanting to move, or did you come away with like, you know what, I'm good where I am?
It's interesting you say that.
What perspective did it give you? Grass is always greener a lot of the times, you know.
It is, and it was everywhere I went was beautiful. They had great things, positive things, but I'm a little bit like the character in The Alchemist. You come back to your own country. You're a different person and you see your place in a different way.
Right.
And that's the beauty of travel.
Yes. Whenever I get frustrated with, you know, it's still a dream of mine, and I'm talking to a lot of expats, and it's very popular in America right now to just look for the other places. But I've been to 100 countries around the world. And yes, there are bits and pieces of things that I like and some things that I don't like. And one thing that it has taught me. A is perspective. B is to appreciate what I do have. Because the longer I'm here, I think about things, you know, I don't have. What we don't have, what we don't. And when I leave, I appreciate what we do. So that's, that helps a lot. And also, it has taught me the C There is no perfect place.
Correct.
You know, and wherever you go, there you are. You know, if you're trying to run away from something that's inside you, it's still going to be in Japan. It's still going to be on that island in Tahiti. It's still there. You might forget it for a little while, but it's going to come back at you. And did that 80 days teach you that?
You're on the money. That's exactly it. Like, for example, South Africa, great food. Everything tastes amazing. The fruits, the vegetables, the meats. And it's like a quarter of the price of what you'd pay in London.
Right.
All right. But South Africa has its downsides too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right.
I mean, no place is perfect. But as you said, each place, you learn something from that. I tell you what I learned in Japan, which might intrigue you and your audience, is thank God for Google Maps and Google Translate.
Oh, the Translate is a game changer now. The first time I went there, it didn't exist. And, you know, you can't, at least in Spanish, I know, or in Italian, a ristorante, that's a restaurant. I can read that. But those symbols and everything else, it could be a bank, it could be a spa, it could be, who knows?
You know, and so, especially when you're out of the main cities in Japan.
Absolutely.
You're in the rural places. And I traveled by train everywhere in Japan because it's the best way to travel.
Yep.
And Google Translate saved my ass so many times.
Yeah.
But one time I got lost I'm thinking it was Kanazawa. I was lost in Kanazawa. I could not find and I couldn't find my where I was on Google Maps. So long story short, it made me realize what an immigrant who doesn't speak English must feel like when they come to the UK or to the US. And this time they've actually got to make a living. How do you make a living when you can't talk the language?
Yes, I hear. I think about that every time this argument comes up with people who, you know, you're at an ATM and it says, what language do you want to work in? And they go, well, what do you mean? Why do I got to pick a language? And I go, hey, man, if you ever been in that person where, you know, you're in, say, Japan or you can't read what the machine is saying and there's that English option, man, oh, man, you're really glad. You're really thankful and you won't complain anymore when there's options.
Absolutely.
You know, so, yeah, I hear what you're saying. What part, I know you obviously probably went to Tokyo. And did you make it to Okinawa or did you go to – what other places did you see in Japan?
Well, this is what happened. I did want to go to Okinawa, but there were a lot of other places I want to go to. In 2 weeks, just wouldn't cut it.
Yeah.
And Okinawa took me too far out. But in Japan, the two things I'd like to share with you and your audience is as a kid, I always admired the samurai. And I wanted to really get to grips with – authenticity in the samurai clan. And so the travel agency actually did find someone who was a descendant, 600-year descendant, you know, with a sort of family tree and all that stuff, to the first shogun. And it was fascinating. These guys still hold their swords from 600 years ago. The way it's been made is just phenomenal. The swordsmiths and the history. And it's just the idea of the word samurai just means to serve. And the beauty is that when you go in Japan, the samurai were abolished, but their ethos lives on because the Japanese are always in this service mode. You know, from the train conductor who bows every time he comes into the compartment and bows again when they leave, you know, to the packaging that they do when they offer you a product that you're buying. It's just mind-blowing, the concept of service, which I think we've kind of lost in the West. Ours is a kind of more appearances. I think the authenticity is lost.
Right.
I took back that. Yeah. And so I sensed in a way that, you know, what I'm doing is service. That gives meaning to what I'm doing.
Well, talk about – oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go.
I just wanted to, you mentioned this DARE method, which is like kind of like when you, I think this is a big proponent of your presentations.
Yes.
and your your books, I guess.
Yes.
Talk quickly about the DARE method and what it means and the gospel you're spreading.
All right. Thank you. DARE, in a nutshell, is another word for courage. And courage is not an intellectual faculty thing. It's heart-based, right? And people, you know, people think that they can summon courage here. Courage does not reside. In fact, the word courage comes from cor, Latin, or corazón, meaning heart. And so when you have to take this step, courageous step to unretire, it is a step of courage. Because you're saying goodbye to something you've believed in for the last 40 years. And you're now having to trek through this liminal space that scares the bejesus out of all of us, right? That takes courage. But my view is that there's an element of courage because you have to say goodbye to the comfort, or should we say, the illusory comfort of staying on your sofa and playing it safe and not doing anything meaningful. But what's the courage in wasting your life? But also, DARE is an acronym for discover, assimilate, rewire, and expand. Discover what retirement is and what it's not. Assimilate is about assimilating an understanding of how our mind actually works, right? We think we're making decisions when we're actually just responding to programs that we've been taught that we're not in control of. So assimilate new information about how our mind works, particularly the subconscious mind. R is for rewire. Rewire the stories we tell ourselves, right? The stories and beliefs, again, we've taken it secondhand from our people, our families, our culture, our education. It's not ours. And E is for expand. Just at the time when everybody is, as a retiree, you're pulling back. You're withdrawing. It's counterintuitive. Why? Because if you only had 2 more years to live, then you're doing the right thing withdrawing. But sadly, we've been given longer lives. We have another 25 years to go. You cannot afford to retire, not just financially, but if you don't want to go gaga, you need to be emotionally and mentally engaged in something you love to do. So money is a secondary factor here. You need to get out of where you are, find out what you love to do. Now, when you ask people, what do you love to do? What would you like to do? Most people, like me, would have said, I don't know. I have no idea. Well, guess what? Travel is the answer. Travel gets you out of this comfort zone, allows you to open up. So, for example, in Australia, I happened to, as one of my things, I landed in this Museum of Immigration in Melbourne, unplanned. The other 2 museums that I had planned to go to were closed on that day. So I went to this one, and serendipity, there was an exhibition on identity, my language. And I was blown away because I was learning about identity, because they'd had this exhibition, which clearly they spent a great deal of time and effort putting together. And it's about how insidious our identity is, in the sense that it's not written in stone. It's malleable. We can change it. And one of the secrets, of course, is not caring about what other people think.
Right.
That is a huge, huge thing, because we're imprisoned by what others think.
If I'm interested about, I didn't know there was an immigration museum in, is it in Melbourne?
Melbourne, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Because in Australia, oddly enough, they fought immigration for quite a while. And it's interesting that they have a museum devoted to it, because I was amazed to find out that, I don't think they didn't allow any non-white immigration until like the 70s. It was, I think it was like 73 or something. That's pretty, you know, that's pretty tight. So what is the theme of the Immigration Museum in Australia? That we're into it now, or just like,
no,
we accept this past that we had? And
well, this is how I went in thinking, just as you said, but I realized that it's not just about us having to change our identity. Australia's identity has evolved. Back in until the 1950s or 60s, only white English or British people were allowed to emigrate to Australia. I think it was 60s or 70s, they opened the floodgates to Europeans.
Well, I think, wasn't there a little bit after World War II because, we fought for these people. So that was that wave of like Greeks and Croatians.
Greeks and Italians.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons.
Exactly.
Like the football, the socceroos, it's all like Croatian last names because their parents came over after the war.
100%.
But still,
100%.
They had to be white, though. It was like.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Now, here's the thing, though. At the end of the Second World War, Britain did not want to allow any of its sons and daughters to emigrate to Australia. They needed the manpower. So Australia, I think their motto was populate or perish. They had to open the gates to other Europeans, essentially initially Italians and Greeks, and then all the other Europeans. And then I think it was in the 80s or something, they then opened up to others. So the identity of Australians has evolved. And I only recognized that, oh my God, that's exactly what's happened in the UK and in America. And we're not going back. We can't go back. You can't throw all these people out. It's not possible.
Oh, they're trying. Let me tell you,
I know.
Now more than ever, they're trying.
Well, the reality is they're now going to throw anybody, right? When you think about it, once you get all the criminal element out, which can't be a big deal because it's got to be pretty limited, you're now having to throw out genuine people who are
working.
Immigrants, working people who are, you know, who are paying their taxes, who are trying to do right by every, you know, and actually people who are fearful and afraid.
Yeah. And actually doing the jobs that a lot of the locals don't want to do. And
exactly.
Then we're finding, hey, we kind of need these people. Wasn't that the big thing during COVID and stuff when they realized they wanted to throw out in the UK, there was, you know, the healthcare system, and they realized that all the nurses and all the help were mostly immigrants. You know, and like,
correct.
Hey, we kind of need these people to do the work.
Well, that's exactly my point. So I only realized I was looking for the personal journey of identity evolution, but I also learned the evolution of identity of Australians, and on the back of that, of Brits and Americans.
And Canadians.
Our societies and Canadians.
Right.
Our societies have evolved, but our mindset hasn't evolved with it.
Right, yeah.
So that was Australian immigration. So travel does, as Mark Twain said,
fatal to prejudice, bigotry, fatal and narrow-mindedness, or whatever.
Thank you very much. That's exactly it. Well done.
We all know that one. That was the motto of this podcast for a while. So we'll blast through the 80 days really quick. So Canada, where did you go? Did you start from one coast to the other, or did you stay?
I did. Oh, no.
Okay.
I flew in
across from
Tokyo. I flew across from Tokyo to Vancouver.
One of my favorite cities in North America. Beautiful.
It is beautiful. It rains probably slightly more than London.
A lot, yeah.
It's wet, but it's very green and beautiful. And so I did a little bit of traveling near Vancouver. I think it's Salt Spring Island. I took one of these mail runs over there.
Oh, yeah.
And then I took the Canadian train, which goes across the whole of Canada all the way to Toronto. But I just took it from Vancouver to Jasper, Alberta. Okay.
Did you do the Rocky Mountaineer train?
No, I couldn't.
Okay.
So I went on the Canadian,
which
is a sleeper train again. But again, what I learned about Canada, well, about North America, was those trains, man. Those trains are like 5 miles long, 200 cars. with an engine at the back, at the front, and in the middle.
Yeah.
And the passenger trains are subservient to the cargo because they're owned by the cargo is owned by, you know, the rail lines are owned by the cargo train.
Yeah.
So it took us much longer to get to Jasper than planned.
Oh, and to come from Japan too, when you're on that bullet train and then you come here and it's so slow. Oh my God. Yeah.
True. But it's more like the Orient Express.
Yeah. You try to make it nice.
Yeah.
I've only taken the luxury Rocky Mountaineer train. I did and we did go to Jasper and Banff and boy,
but
is it gorgeous.
You can't sleep on the Rocky Mountains.
No, yet. A lot of people don't know that. You got to spend the night in Kamloops, BC.
Yeah.
But yeah, you did the sleeper train then.
I did the sleeper train.
Okay.
And then from there, and the sleeper train, my cabin was smaller than Nelson Mandela's jail, let me tell you. but anyway, and then for me, one of the most beautiful drives was a 3-hour drive from Jasper to Lake Louise on the I-93, the Icefields Parkway. I mean, the Rocky Mountain range with those magnificent snow-capped mountains. One of the things, again, of travel to see some incredibly beautiful landscape with lakes, rushing rivers, magnificent forests, is that I think it was, what's his name? Psychologist Dacher Keltner, who talked about awe. And how the feeling of awe when you're looking at 3 hours felt like 15 minutes. the awe is, you know, door is like releases dopamine. It's a neurotransmitter associated with pleasure and reward. And he talks about how awe is beyond language, beyond thought, and beyond religion. And it puts you in this space of expansion, which is the last letter of dare. That expansion is, you know, or as Cicero would have said, old age is the crown of life. The right. Best is yet to come. It's all a state of mind.
But when you talk about retirement for a lot of people, and I've always advocated travel, but one of the big stumbling blocks to a lot of people is money. And one of the things I've always tried to advocate that travel is not doesn't have to be as expensive as you think it's going to be, for one. But two, some people, for whatever reason, health reasons, money reasons, yes, fear, and all that, which we try to overcome, can't travel or won't travel. How do you, if they're listening to this now, it's like, yes, it sounds great to eat, pray, love yourself across the world, but some of us just can't do it. Or they have family commitments. Right now I have an aging mom who, in Florida, who, as much as I'd love to, live in Asia for a while, being that far from her at this point in her life would be tough for me. How do you deal with people who say that and go, and yes, that sounds great, but I can't really do that right now, but I have to retire. So, yeah.
Well, listen, I mean, that's a really, really good question. And talking about mothers, my mother's 97. She has full onset of dementia.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Listen, it's just life. And I belong in the sandwich generation. You know, you're looking after the parents and you've got adult kids and you're still scrambling. I get it. We all have that. But remember, you don't have to go around the world in 80 days. You don't have to do what I did. I did because that was my epic journey that I always wanted to do, even as a kid, and never got to do it. And for me, it was my last chance saloon to do this. But secondly, I wanted to inspire people to do their own gap year. And everybody's got different circumstances. And you got to cut your cloth to your measure. You don't need to travel the whole world. Choose one place, even in your own country, but in somewhere different, very different. Because it's about changing your perspective, coming out of where you are. And my mother was last year, she was 96. Now, I had thoughts about, should I do it after she goes? Should I wait? Should I not wait? I'm glad I did it because she's still here.
Right.
You know, I may not be able to do it again if I'd waited.
Yeah.
So you don't you don't need to play God, right? You can do what you know. You have, I think what we forget is we love our families, but our first obligation is to ourselves, right? There's no point betraying yourself, sacrificing yourself, because here's the thing. You can't love the people near and dear to you if you don't love yourself first. That's a simple thing. Right. I mean, it's as simple as that. You have an obligation to do what's right for you, and you have to make that decision. Sometimes you'll get it right, sometimes you'll get it wrong. But our obligation is to ourselves first. Otherwise, you know, even if you take this Christian adage about love your neighbor as yourself, it's an equation. If you don't love yourself, how can you love your neighbor? End of.
They said it long ago. The love you take is equal to the love you make. It's right there on the album. It's right there.
No, but seriously.
No, yeah, really. There is truth in that. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
If that's, yeah, you, if you don't love yourself, you're going to, that's,
yeah.
It's all going to go downhill from there.
Now, you're not going to go to Tokyo to get a job in the next couple of years and leave your mum here. But
no,
that doesn't mean you can't take off time to go to one specific country that you, exactly. But I'm talking more to your audience.
Sure. Yeah.
Go to a country that you've always wanted to visit, that's always intrigued you. Do it now because you may not get another chance. And give it a bit of time. You don't have to do a whole year. I didn't. I only did 80 days, but that's a gap year.
Oh, yeah.
Technically.
I've advocated it forever on this show that you certainly don't know health-wise whether you can do it. You certainly don't know time-wise whether you can do it. And politically and geopolitically, you don't know if that country is going to be open. I mean, I had a trip planned to Nepal this October that ended up being canceled for, you know, various reasons. But just last week, Nepal, you know, had riots in their capital, and that could be going on while I would have been there. So you just never know.
You don't. And I don't want to make it distasteful, but don't book Qatar either.
Well, my flight was going through Doha. That was one of the reasons I canceled it. And so,
ouch.
Yeah, that gorilla thing I did was in 2019. And a year later, the world stopped. And I would have lost a big chunk of, you know, that would have been disappointing. I had another thing happen where I had you just don't know. And I told people the first time I went to Europe, again, age-wise, it was 89. There were two Germanys. There was a Soviet Union. There was a Czechoslovakia, a Yugoslavia, and none of that stuff exists anymore.
It was a different world.
Yes, and it changed quickly. And some countries shut down, some open up. And if you can get to it, jump on it. But I am fascinated, just before we wrap it up,
yes,
about that silent retreat. You didn't talk for 30 days?
I didn't talk for 30 days. Well, wow. Actually, that's a lie. Hang on.
Okay.
I only had 30 minutes a day with my director where I would talk for 15 minutes about the last 24 hours, and I'd get instructions as to what I should be doing or the direction I should be thinking for the next 24 hours. So that was the only time. But the hardest part was the first 3 days of what I call the descent into the silence. For somebody who's got a gob like me, it is hard.
Right.
But once I was in, it was beautiful. It was, I think the only way I can explain it is that it's almost like peeling an onion. You're peeling away your own personas. We have many personas. I think psychologists say we have up to 30 personas each. So, and one of the things I discovered in that silence was my vulnerable self that I didn't even want to see, let alone show anybody else. Because that's the vulnerable side, because I had created this persona that was confident, knew pretty much everything, close to, Not as much as Trump, but close.
Sure.
Close.
You know everything.
But and you realize, I kind of realized that this was a complete waste of space, and I wanted to find out what I truly who I truly was, or who my higher self was. And on the back of that, during that 30 days, I'd grown a beard. I looked like Moses coming down the mountain. And once I shaved down my thing, I kept my beard as a reminder to stay true to myself and not go back to who I was.
When you walked out after 30 days, did the world just seem loud? Did everything just seem overly loud and like sensory overload after that?
Totally. In fact, it was worse because I was gagging to talk. And so for the first 30 minutes, I could not stop talking. And I got such a bad headache that I went kind of silent for the rest of that day. I did not want to talk to anybody. Didn't want to. And it took a few weeks to go back to my normal pace of communication. But I still, to this day, and I was never able to do that before, I hated my own company. I always needed to be with people. And in that silence, I learned the power and joy of solitude. Whereas before, I would have labeled that as loneliness. Hell shit, I do not want to be lonely.
Right.
I want people. I need people. But that silent retreat taught me about I need boundaries. I need to have my own solitude. And I don't need to justify it. I need that to recharge my batteries.
Did you have like a meditation practice or anything before this? Did you have something before that? And did this teach you to have like take a moment of every day or like whatever time? It could be 15 minutes and just kind of like decompress. Do you do that now daily?
I do that daily now, but before then it was infrequent.
Sure.
It wasn't, but now the 15 or sometimes 30 minutes that I take at the beginning of the day makes me ready to open myself to the world. If I stop or don't do that for a day, that day goes haywire. I lose my balance. I lose my I get trapped into squandering my energy to whichever energy is pulling me. If that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Well, let's center yourself.
Yeah. That's great. What is the site? Where can people find you? Where can people, if they want to like read your stuff, if you've written or see you speak somewhere?
My website is georgejergian.com. That's JERJIAN.com. My social media handles are George Jergian or Retirement Rebellion. And I have that on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Does this take up your time now? Is this your new profession?
This is my new mission.
And as we all have learned, a mission and a purpose is what we all need.
Absolutely. And I actually feel more energized now than I did 10 years ago.
That's great. And how's your health?
Yeah, I'm in good health.
Good for you.
As far as I know.
Congratulations.
As far as I know. Thank you.
Hey, man, beating cancer. You know, I've lost a great friend this year to it. And we're just going to see more and more of it as I get older. I got to accept it. But boy, if you can overcome it.
It sucks.
It's great. But so congratulations.
Thank you
for reaching out and doing this. And I'm going to ask the question. Hang on afterwards because we'll talk for a minute. But
sure.
What did you've talked extensively of what this gap year taught you, but of all your travels and all the things you've seen over the how has it changed you as a person and how you look at people, and what has it ultimately taught you?
A really, really powerful question. I think the first thing is I would say it's about I realized that I stop myself from judging people. It doesn't matter, even if they upset me, I recognize it's probably got nothing to do with me. So why am I going to get angry? It's almost like somebody has just passed by me and given me a virus. And I've taken it on board as mine. No, reject. I do not accept. Their problem, I wish them well, move forward. But I think travel for me, in a sense, can be captured by, and I have to use quotes because that captures the essence of what I'm trying to say. And I'm just thinking, Paulo Coelho, who wrote The Alchemist, about the person who travels around North Africa, he does his own 80 days gap year or whatever, comes back and he's transformed. And the place that the place where he came from is transformed. So it's a completely new identity and new life. Paulo Coelho said, maybe the journey isn't about becoming anything. Maybe it's about unbecoming everything that is not really you, so that you can become who you were meant to be in the first place. And in a sense, my trip, in a nutshell, did just that. I didn't become somebody. I unbecame all the things I was not to allow who I am to emerge. And that's what I wish your audience.
That's great. George, I appreciate you doing this. And we'll have links to all your sites and everything else at TravelTalesPodcast.com. And next time I'm in London, I'll let you know. And then we'll grab a pint somewhere.
That'll be delightful. Mike, thank you so much. Really appreciate this. Thank you.
Thank you for doing this. But check it out, everybody. Dare. Dare to travel. That's what I said. George Georgie and everybody.
Bye.
For spontaneous travelers, Winging It is the perfect listen. James Hammond shares stories and tips from 75-plus countries. Find it at voyescape.com.